time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Dialogue Conspiracy, December the 9th, 1974, number 174, program 174, in Carmel, California. Last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I talked at length about the book written by Harold Weisberg called Whitewash 4. I got a lot of phone calls at the house about that book. I'll give you the address again if you want to order it or ask your bookstores to get it. Harold Weisberg, W-E-I-S-S-B-E-R-G, Frederick, the city is Frederick, Maryland, Route 8 in Frederick, Maryland, zip code 21710, and the book costs $6.65. This is the book with the minutes of the Warren Commission meeting of January 27, 1974, where Alan Dulles, a member of the Warren Commission who used to be head of the CIA, said that the CIA or the FBI would lie if they were asked if Oswald was an agent, that they would bury the rumor. The purpose of the Warren Commission was to bury the rumor that Oswald was an agent. It was more than a rumor. He actually was an agent of Navy intelligence and worked with the FBI from September 1962 until the time of the assassination. And this book has a lot of valuable information in it, and so I give you that address again. The article I did in Playgirl will be going off the stand soon if you want it and haven't read it. The one on the burial of Howard Hughes, and the question is, Howard Hughes dead and buried off a Greek island. I think there's one more week before that goes off the stand. It's not like the realist that I keep sending out every week issues. People send me $2, I'll send them 3 copies of the realist or 50 cents plus postage for any single article that I did there. Those are always available. The Playgirl article on Howard Hughes goes off the stands this next week, I believe. Our local bookstore carries the Glasshouse tapes now, the Lewis Tackwood book, The Thunderbird in Carmel, and I see it in Monterey, too. And for those of you in the East or up North who get the tapes, listen to these shows, a very important book that has been suppressed in a way, hasn't gotten much publicity, but it's holding its own and beginning to sell a lot now, is The Glasshouse Tapes by Lewis Tackwood. This book is important because it shows the links of the CIA to the local police department, and I have an announcement here that Congress is going to be investigating the CIA carefully for the next 2 years. I'll go into details about that in a few minutes. There's a decision now to get into the role of the CIA, and if you remember, the original charter did not include domestic functions, and Tackwood goes into the work of people like himself working with the CIA and the FBI and the local police department, and then linking it to the White House, and in this particular case, Richard Nixon, but it's still connected to the FBI, the CIA, from the local level, and it's a very important book, and I'm glad to see it on the stand. So they are available now. Glasshouse Tapes by Lewis Tackwood. Also last week, I read an article about the federal government's role in mind-altering, behavior modification, and in mind-altering, and that Sam Ervin was the head of a committee on constitutional rights in Washington, D.C., and they just published some conclusions on the role of government agencies putting electrode implants and controlling people surgically, putting the implants in their heads, and then giving them instructions outside, psychosurgery, hypnotism, drugs, electroshock, the use of these techniques upon people by the federal government funding these projects. I wrote that last week to Senator Sam Ervin, and I'm going to give you the address, and ordered the entire study that was presented to the Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights. If you want to get the book, it's called The Individual Rights and the Federal Role in Behavior Modification. You can't write that down that quickly, but I'm sure if you just say The Individual Rights and mind control, you'll be able to get this from the government. It's dated November 1974. The subcommittee in Washington is the Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights. And there's an address here, Superintendent of Documents, U.S. Government Printing Office, Washington, D.C., 20403. Now, if I'm going too fast, you can write to me at KLRB and send me a self-addressed envelope, and I'll give you the details on this. This is a 649-page book, and it's very important because for the first time, the federal government is admitting the use of implants and hypnosis on individuals. And I want to read you parts of this particular, the introduction of this particular study on constitutional rights, because in the study that I did on political assassinations and that I keep doing, it becomes obvious to the serious researchers that the use of hypnotism was done in the major political assassinations, and I know it's being done in many instances of violence that I've talked about on this show from time to time. I know that Sirhan was hypnotized. I have a quotation here from a book, that RFK Must Die by Robert Kaiser, on page 286, and Robert Kaiser, the writer, was asking Sirhan about how he got the Ambassador Hotel, the particular man who drove him there by the name of Mr. Owen. And Sirhan was talking about Owen, and then Kaiser goes on and said, but then Sirhan volunteered a suggestion of his own. Maybe, said Sirhan, he could lead to someone who was playing with my mind. This is a quotation. Sirhan talked about the danger of putting one's mind under the control of other people he did not know. I always tried to guard against that, said Sirhan, but now he had his doubts. He asked me to look into it, to look into every possibility that maybe he had put his mind in the control of another. All right, I said, but now if we're going to go into this, we ought to know more about the people that were in the same mind science thing with you. The only one, said Sirhan, is Tom. I told you about him, but I don't want to involve him. He's much too good a man for this to change my mind. This was Walter Thomas Rottke, R-A-T-H-K-E, the groom who had introduced Sirhan to the occult. Now, in the case of the political assassinations, as I say, the Sirhan was hypnotized, carefully hypnotized, so that his memory would be erased after he shot Robert Kennedy. Jack Ruby was in the control of two hypnotists. One was Billy Del Mar at the nightclub. The other was David Ferry from New Orleans. Mrs. Hunt, E. Howard Hunt's wife, went down to a plane crash in Chicago, the famous Flight 553 United Airlines, and in her purse was the name of two hypnotists and that she had on her possession. And at the White House cover-up trial taking place right now, it came out just a few weeks ago that Mrs. Hunt had said that she'd have to get a hypnotist for Mrs. Liddy, G. Gordon Liddy, because Mrs. Liddy was breaking down and wanted to talk about her husband's role, and they'd have to supply her with a hypnotist. This came out just a few weeks ago in the cover-up trial. James Ray was attending the office of a hypnotist in Los Angeles. When he was arrested in London, he had two books with him on hypnosis. Lee Harvey Oswald was at a hospital for a mastoid operation and for 3 weeks, and it was a very simple operation, and there's a book, Were We Controlled, that hints that electrodes were put into his brain, and he was married to a woman, an agent of the CIA, Marina Oswald, who was a trained pharmacist who used drugs. And the first thing that Marguerite Oswald said when her son came home from the Soviet Union and been gone a few years was that Lee's hair was falling out, he was ash gray, and she thought something had been given to him. I have a notice here, it's an article that has to do with Fort Ord, California, in our local area, and it says, the smiling young man who murdered Mrs. Martin Luther King was, in quotes, acting in response to pressures brought on by a group of military scientists monitoring his sensory system, a minister believes. Reverend Joseph A. Johnson of Wesley United Methodist Church in Phoenix, Arizona, is convinced this is what happened. He is convinced that he was involved in a similar experiment. Johnson was at one time a chaplain at Fort Ord Training Center in California. That's just a few miles from KLRB. Here, he claims several Army men, including himself, were ensnared unwittingly into an experimental program of mind research. The minister claimed an attempt was also made at controlling the influence of religious organizations and to supplant them with less traditional modes of expression. So mind control is important to the individual and his freedoms, and that is the purpose of my research anyway, is to maintain our individual freedoms as much as we can. And I do want to read part of this document, and you might want to send for it. But before I do, I also want to mention an article that was in this Sunday's paper, December the 8th, by William J. Cromie. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle. It says, hypnosis is useful but not infallible. And it goes on to say, experiments suggest that a skilled hypnotist can induce antisocial or criminal action, such as murder. Depending on the morals of the hypnotist and on the personality of the subject, suggestions to induce antisocial actions could be so worded that there would be no hint that what is to be done is criminal. Over a period of time, moral conflict can be eliminated by distorting a person's sense of reality through delusions, hallucinations, and illusions. By these and other means, a person is made to feel that an immoral or criminal act is worthwhile and to be condemned. How can a person prevent being victimized? No one should attempt to do anything with hypnosis that he is not qualified to handle the results of that. He should become non-cooperative with people who want to try hypnosis upon him. It is difficult or impossible to hypnotize someone who doesn't want to be put under. And this article goes on to say that hypnosis, even with lie detector tests, is not accurate because under hypnosis, a person cannot break, if he's under hypnosis, he can't break the spell. For example, Sirhan cannot go into where he was at Corona del Mar just before he went to the Ambassador Hotel. He still shakes his head and is still under the effect of forgetting what happened to him. But this article is done by a doctor in Houston, Texas, an authority from Baylor School of Medicine in Houston, that says it is possible to get an assassin hypnotized and to believe that he did what is right. The hypnosis that was done to Jack Ruby was that he would be a hero, that everyone would praise him for killing the alleged assassin of John Kennedy. And it was done by an agent of the CIA, and the literature that was used to make him a hero was found on the seat of his car. It was the script that was written out for Jack Ruby, and I'm going to write a book on it someday and try to do a whole large article or a book on the use of mind control in the political assassinations. So it is being done to affect our candidates, to erase the minds of the people who shoot a man running for president in 1968, to alter the patsy who did not shoot John Kennedy, the case of Lee Harvey Oswald, but who was put in a position where he could be framed and made to look like he was the assassin. Well, the book, the government book that I suggested from the government printing office, I do want to read the preface today because I think it's important. It's written by Sam Ervin, who has been very instrumental in guarding our civil liberties, and he will be retiring this January, and it will be a loss to Americans because we need his type of mind on the Senate Judiciary. Right now, when he leaves, we have Roman Herska and Hugh Scott, Strom Thurmond, Edward Gurney, James Eastland. You have a whole list of men that tilt the bank over one side who wouldn't raise a finger in terms of speaking up about these rights. And there's a handful of people there like John Tunney or Robert Byrd who maybe would speak up and be more vocal about psychosurgery and the implants and so forth that are going on. But a preface to the book, the 600-page book, begins, this is part of the sentences in it, by Sam Ervin. It said, when the Founding Fathers established our constitutional system of government, they based it on their fundamental belief in the sanctity of the individual. They declared, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Founding Fathers took care to see that these inalienable rights were carefully protected. They understood that self-determination is the source of individuality, and that individuality is the mainstay of freedom. As threats to individual freedom have arisen from time to time during our history, laws have been developed to ensure the basic constitutional guarantees are assured. Technology has begun to develop new methods of behavior control capable of altering not just an individual's actions, but his very personality and the manner of thinking as well. Because it affects the ability of the individual to think for himself, the behavioral technology being developed in the United States today touches upon the most basic sources of individuality and the very core of personal freedom. To my mind, the most serious threat posed by the technology of behavior modification is the power this technology gives one man to impose his views and values on another. In our democratic society, values such as political and religious preferences are expressly left to individual choice. if our society is to remain free. One man must not be empowered to change another man's personality and dictate the values and the thoughts and the feelings of another. Whenever such therapies are applied to alter men's minds, extreme care must be taken to prevent the infringement of individual rights. Concepts of freedom, privacy, and self-determination inherently conflict with programs taking place today that are designed to control not just your physical freedom, but the source of your free thoughts as well. Moreover, because the power of the federal government is limited to the implementation of the Constitution and the protection of constitutional rights, we are faced with a real question now whether that government is involved and should be involved in programs that potentially pose threats to our freedom. The Constitution is to protect our rights, and the federal government is funding programs to take away our freedom. The question becomes more acute when the programs are being conducted as they are today in the absence of any strict controls. There is an unchecked growth in the practical technology of behavior control, and it is a cause for great concern. Technology has expanded our capacity for meeting society's needs. It has also increased to a startling degree our ability to enter and affect the lives of the individual citizens. And in its continuing study of individual rights, the subcommittee has considered questions raised with respect to freedoms by such technology as computers or polygraphs or wiretapping. And this is a point that I always wonder. We talk about surveillance or wiretapping or moratorium on that. He said, similarly, in addition to watching the computer and the polygraph and wiretapping, we've watched grow a concern for behavioral research, and it opens up new capabilities. With a rapid proliferation of behavior modification techniques, it is all the more disturbing that few real efforts are being made to consider the issue of the individual freedom involved, and they minimize the fundamental conflict between your rights and behavior technology. The constitutional rights of the mentally ill and those of the prisoner are being deprived. Through these interests, the subcommittee became aware of the increasing employment of new scientific techniques of behavior modification directed at these two captive populations. In response to this situation, the staff of the Senate Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights was directed to conduct an investigation of behavior modification programs with emphasis on the federal government's involvement in the technology of behavior control and the implications of what it's doing to your rights. The larger question is whether the federal government, and this is the taxes that you pay to the federal government, has any business at all in participating in a program to alter the substance of your freedom. The subcommittee has assembled in this report a mass of information concerning government sanctioned programs designed to predict, to control, and to modify your human behavior. There is a widespread growth in the development of methods designed to predict and to identify and control and modify your behavior. Few measures have been taken to resolve the question of your freedom or your privacy or your self-determination. The federal government is heavily involved in a variety of behavior modification programs, ranging from simple reinforcement techniques to psychosurgery. A number of departments and agencies include the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor, the Veterans Administration, the Department of Defense, the National Science Foundation. They fund, participate in, and sanction research in aspects of behavior modification in the absence of any reviews, guidelines, or standards for participation. The Department of Health, Education, and Welfare has inadequate systems of regulations and only recently began to take steps to resolve the fundamental constitutional question raised by the federal government's involvement in behavior modification and behavior control technology. Now, that's all I'm going to read of that book today. I will read you some next week on the UCLA School for the Study of Violent Behavior. When Ronald Reagan had his State of the Union message 2 years ago, he was going to have this study at UCLA on violent behavior, on life-threatening behavior. That was in January 73. I put aside everything I was doing and spent the bulk of 73 and 74, and then it led to the SLA, which also had to do with drugs and psycho mind control of the SLA members. I began to study what was going on at UCLA, and in my article in The Realist, August 73, that was just three quarters of a year after the January 73 announcement of the UCLA Institute, I wrote in The Realist, it was the article called "The Senate Select Committee is Part of the Cover-Up," and I had a section, "The Martial Law Without the Riots," and one of the big dangers of our freedom in the United States was that UCLA school that I really fought hard through letters and going up to Sacramento to stop that project. I might just read you a little bit about what the subcommittee says about this, because when Reagan, I'll read it today, when Reagan announced in January 73 what he was going to do, I realized just how he was going to affect the lives in California. It would be an experiment for around the country, and I smelled the tentacles of fascism there. And in the Senate subcommittee book on constitutional rights, this is what they said about UCLA. "We recognize, as all citizens must, that violence is a major concern today. And nevertheless, we are also concerned with reduction of violence, but also the protection of human rights. In 1968, California officials secretly did an operation on the brains of three prisoners, paying scant regard to legal and ethical issues of informed consent." It was like a lobotomy of their brains. "This serious tampering with the human brain yielded no favorable results for reducing crime or violence. In fact, the prisoner, reported by officials to be the most improved, is still in prison today. His old symptoms have returned. He suffers additionally from memory loss and other effects of the brain destruction. A program of mind-crippling psychosurgery was nearly established in 1971 before secret documents came to public attention and forced the Department of Corrections, that's our California prison system, and the University of California at San Francisco to back off. They were going to perform operations with their plan. The proposed Center for the Study of Violent Behavior represents a resurrection of the same scientifically invalid, ethically deficient, and legally questionable practice. Although the present proposal represents only a small proportion of the research to be conducted at the center, the guidelines are clear as to the direction in which the center's work will be navigated. Chemical castration, psychosurgery, testing of experimental drugs on involuntary incarcerated individuals are prominent features of their proposal. Notably lacking is research into the ethical and legal limitations of such activity. The projects seek to fund immediately involve the most severe intrusion into human psyche. The proposal establishes no mechanism to protect the rights of the persons who will be experimented upon. In an age of rapidly advancing technology, when the cry for law and order at any cost is at its most shrill, it is necessary to be even more sensitive to the preservation of human dignity and fundamental principles of liberty and freedom. It is also necessary to be sensitive to the possibility of political manipulation of scientific research to repress healthy dissent and legitimate disagreement in a changing society. Our examination of the proposed center convinces us that it is particularly susceptible to political manipulation, totally devoid of protection of human rights and liberties, scientifically inadequate, generally unresponsive to the need for a decrease in the level of violence in our culture. And it goes into the political manipulation of the University of California on mind control. I have to say, for those of you who have listened to Dialogue Conspiracy over a couple of years, some of you have listened for 3.5 years, those of you who have listened since January 73 know how many times I've hit at that UCLA school, how proud I worked and how much time I spent in investigating the doctors there, what they were going to do, going to hearings, writing letters for papers, LA Star and different papers, sending letters to assemblymen, to Washington, to the congressmen, members of the judiciary. And I'm very happy. I'm not happy at this kind of news or these kind of people. But once again, my instincts were right. I smelled something really rotten down there. The federal funding has been cut off for 2 years of the monsters, so that the conclusions coming out in 1974, in November 1974, after a study on that group, convinces me that some of my instincts about these things, when you pursue them, All right, and I'm glad to see that the Congress has a nice resume on the School for Violence and that they've been sized up for what they are. So if you want to order that book, they sent it to me free. I wrote to the subcommittee, but maybe because I've written to Sam Ervin so much and they know about my research, and that's why they did it. The book sells for $5.35 from the government printing office, and it has a marvelous bibliography of the political psychosurgery going on, the failures, the attempts, the electrode implants, and because I talk about it so much in terms of political assassinations and the mind control of the patsies involved, you might want to send for this book, ask for it, and it is $5.35 from the government printing office, but you might request it for research, and they may send it to you free like they did to me. It's Individual Rights and the Federal Role in Behavior Modification, the Federal Role. November 1974, the Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights, Superintendent of Documents, U.S. Government Printing Office, Washington, D.C., 20403. 649-page book with a lot of references of books and articles that I have in my library and filing cabinet, and it is a good source of reference for what's going on in this country. Well, this next 15 minutes, I want to talk some more about what Mr. Nixon knows and the CIA, because it is the CIA that is behind these things, psychosurgery and mind control and political assassinations. There's an article by Tom Braden, Washington Post, this last week, that hits upon a subject that I dwell upon almost every week on Dialogue Conspiracy. It is titled, What Else Does Mr. Nixon Know? And it says, if Special Prosecutor Ruth gets his way, the last big mystery of the Watergate may be cleared up by Richard Nixon himself. I don't believe it's the last big mystery. There's a lot of them, but he goes on. He said, the last big mystery is what E. Howard Hunt meant when he wrote his recently disclosed memorandum of November 14th, 72. This is what he said in quotes, the Watergate bugging is only one of a number of highly illegal conspiracies engaged in by one or more of the defendants at the behest of senior White House officials. Hunt wrote an appeal for more help from Nixon White House, and he added, these as yet undisclosed crimes can be proved. Now, historian Arthur Schlesinger has written, this extraordinary statement has met with total incuriosity. It's a new word. Incuriosity, Schlesinger said, is no one interested in what these highly illegal conspiracies, these undisclosed crimes were that the senior White House officials ordered? The answer is that the special prosecutor is interested and will make every attempt to interest former President Nixon. I have to interject from the article here because the prosecutor, all he has to do is call in E. Howard Hunt. You see, Nixon can stay sick the rest of his life and not testify. They put everything on Nixon when all the people involved could be called in and asked questions under oath, and just like they're bringing home Richard Helms of the CIA. The prosecutor skirts around not finding out what's happening because he says it all depends upon Nixon, which is a flimsy thing because Nixon may not ever be available, but all the other men are floating around autographing books and floating around the country on different talk shows and acting pretty cocky. And so the prosecutor just has to call him in and ask him some healthy questions himself, and he pins it to the dependency upon Richard Nixon to say what these things were. Ruth's mandate, that's a special prosecutor, is to investigate crimes that all the crimes that Hunt alleges. In addition to authorizing the special prosecutor to investigate the entry into the Democratic National Committee, he is supposed to investigate every offense arising out of the 72 presidential election and the allegations involving members of the White House staff or presidential employees. Ruth had no knowledge of Hunt's memorandum until a few weeks ago, and it raised subjects other than those raised by the defense attorney. Now it goes on, it says, the problem for Ruth, the special prosecutor, is to find out what Hunt is talking about. I see, it wouldn't be a problem at all. All he has to do is ask him in. There have been rumors in this city for a while that the plumbers undertook the break-in of various embassies around town. And there were rumors that the plumbers planted a false birth certificate in Indiana to give rise in the campaign that Democratic nominee George McGovern had fathered an illegitimate child. But even these acts, if somebody did go into the Chilean embassy or plant a fake birth certificate, would be traced to the White House. It was doubtful whether anybody of Hunt's mentality would consider this a crime. Hunt has to be talking about more serious matters. Would Hunt consider conspiracy to assassinate a crime? For many months, he's been buzzing the rumor that Hunt and his men plotted the death of General Torrijos, the Panamanian strongman, and Hunt made a trip to Mexico in connection with this plan. Hunt might think a conspiracy to assassinate a foreigner was nothing but foreign policy, and in any event, the conspiracy wasn't carried out. So the chances are that Richard Nixon has knowledge of some serious domestic crime, and eventually he'll have to talk. Now, Richard Nixon is killed or doesn't talk. There's no reason not to call in Mr. Hunt. As we've said on many shows, Howard Baker said at the close of the Senate investigation that only the tip of the iceberg was seen. James McCord says he would burn every tree in the forest if they implicated the CIA. Hunt says he'll talk about the seamy things for the White House. Now, the mandate to investigate the elections included everything that happened that affected the 1972 election, all offenses arising out of the 72 election. Now, in 1969, Mary Jo Kopechne was murdered. And that had to do with the election because it kept Ted Kennedy from running. I wrote about it in two of my realist articles. Now, E. Howard Hunt, Tony Laskowitz, Herbert Kalbach, John Caulfield, and Charles Colson were involved in the Chappaquiddick. Those high ups, and Ehrlichman, the domestic counsel, all of them. And they haven't gone into the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne yet. And Charles Colson and E. Howard Hunt were involved in the Wallace shooting. And there's money in Haldeman's desk, $400,000, that went to defeat Wallace. And nobody knows where that is, or Congressman Mills that died. There's a whole link of funding through Maryland that had to do with the Wallace shooting. So what I think they're talking about, Tom Brayden is hitting at, when he says political assassinations or conspiracy is a crime, you can't blackmail a person for something you didn't do, like killing the president of Panama, and like he says, that isn't very serious. That's foreign policy, the E. Howard Hunt. And you just getting some papers out of the Chilean embassy isn't a big deal, but he's talking about a serious domestic crime and conspiracy to assassinate. And somebody's going to talk because Tom Brayden is of the CIA, too, so they're each one squealing a little bit on each other. But every week this is coming out a little more and pressuring. And he's suggesting at the end of the article, eventually something is going to happen here, and they're narrowing it to a domestic conspiracy and is an assassination of crime. And I say the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne had to do with the 72 election. The attempted murder of George Wallace had to do with the 72 election. They don't even have to go back to Dallas or the ambassador until when Robert Kennedy was killed in 68. The roommate of Mary Jo Kopechne, her name was Carol Tyler, was murdered in an airplane accident, and she was the secretary for Bobby Baker and knew a lot about what was going on there. Those two girls were both murdered. But the Mary Jo Kopechne murder is important, and I think that as time goes on, we're going to get that'll leak. Maybe one will be the first stories that leaks before the John Kennedy assassination. Now, there are a lot of small magazines carrying articles on political assassinations, the National Tatler, the Enquirer, and the Midnight. And the most interesting article this week is the December 30th issue of Midnight magazine. And a lot of people say, can you trust these similar, like, throwaway sheets? How accurate are they? Are they scare sheets? Are they any basis in fact? And I like to read them. I get a lot of information from Midnight and from Tatler and the Enquirer. In between all the gossip and the psychics and so forth, there is a lot of information. And one of the best-known psychics who's written many books, who's prominent, who's quoted all the time, Sybil Leake, has a scene here which I thought was very interesting. The cover is psychic Sybil Leake goes into a trance and relives Mary Jo's last night, and she finds that Ted's death was plotted by the CIA at Chappaquiddick. Now, this is pretty heavy stuff, even for the cover of Midnight Magazine, and she claims a sinister connection from Chappaquiddick to Watergate. So I read her article very carefully, the things, new things that she got through her psychic feeling and the agreements I have on the Chappaquiddick accident and some of my views that differ with hers that are a little bit different, my research. She's claiming this as a psychic. She hasn't gone into the work the way I do it, but I outlined this article really carefully. And one of some of the things that she says, which, and I'll say that what I agree with her and make these distinctions, she says Mary Jo was used by people in high places, that she died because she knew too much. Her character was ambitious. She wanted to be involved with the people who were planning. It was not a dyed-in-the-wool. She was not a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat at all. I think she was maneuvered into being there. This is Sybil Leach saying it December 30th, 1974. I have copies of telephone bills. I called Mary Jo Capecchi's mother right after her murder, about 2 weeks afterwards, and spoke to her family in Pennsylvania. I said that Mary Jo worked for former Senator Smathers of Florida, that she was a plant inside the Kennedy camp, that she was a spy, that she did not was not in sympathy with Robert Kennedy or Ted Kennedy's campaign, and that she was murdered by drowning, and that she was part of the political scene to inform on them, but they double-crossed her like they did Officer J.D. Tippit in Dallas, and he was murdered, and Oswald was held for that murder. I said, your daughter was set up like J.D. Tippit, that she was a plant inside the camp. So that I had figured out in summer of 69, and this is the psychic feeling that Sybil Leach is having now. She goes on in the article, this is a big thing, that Ted's death plotted by the CIA Chappaquiddick. It's on the stands this week if you want to buy it, the December 30th, 1974, midnight. She says, I don't believe the conspiracy has ended. It succeeded in one thing. It made it more difficult for Kennedy to think in terms of the presidency. These plans go back many years to keep a man like Nixon in office, to keep the power just where it was needed by the CIA. There are now, these are powerful people. Kennedy wouldn't have been easy to handle if he was president, neither would his brothers. This work is not over at all, Sybil Leach said. These are powerful men who have a long-term project, and the three Kennedys have always been in the way of those projects. John Kennedy was killed because of the Bay of Pigs. He didn't do as he was expected in Cuba. Robert Kennedy went because he knew too much, and Ted knows too much about the whole thing. Sybil Leach goes on, in 1969, it was important to the CIA to have one of their men as president of the country. I'm laughing as I'm reading this to you, because those of you who read my realist articles can say, well, Sybil Leach in December 74 is down the line saying what I had put in my two realist articles in 1972 and 73 about the murder of Mary Jo Capecchi and the reason she was murdered. Sybil goes on to say, I believe Nixon was heavily involved with the CIA. It was important to get Nixon home, winning the election in 72, and the only person who would be dangerous to him was a Kennedy in name. What they thought of was a kidnap plan that would be an attempt to get him out of the way forever. Mary Jo was unwittingly used to get him away from the party, and it was successful. She didn't know that she was a pawn in the thing, and that she knew too much, and she would go down. Now, this is what she's saying, and this is what I had called the family and told them about. She says, everybody thought this girl in romanticized terms, but Nixon had spies in the Democratic Party, Watergate showed it, and the CIA got their man home, she says. She was very dedicated right up to the last moment, and believed that this assassination attempt on, she thought that Ted Kennedy was not supposed to get out of the water, and that's where I disagree with Sybil Leach. My research into the water tide and the car and Ted Kennedy and the people who were with him, I don't believe he was driving the car. She says another man drove it and jumped out, and Ted Kennedy was left there to get out by himself. She goes on to say that conspiracy began before July 69. It was operation during the Bay of Pigs. It's linked from Chappaquiddick to Watergate. Watergate began on the bridge in Massachusetts. The link is water, and it flowed right down to Washington. Now, in the Senate Select hearings, when you read about this, heard about the spies, Tony Lassos was talking, and John Caulfield, they had an operation in the summer of 69 called Operation Sandwich, and they never explained what Sandwich was, and the car was lodged in the sand at Chappaquiddick, and I felt that was part of this Chappaquiddick operation. E. Howard Hunt had been up there, Tony Lassowitz was up at the island 6 hours after the accident, but he never said under sworn testimony when he arrived, and it involved John Caulfield and Tony Lassowitz, and the car was in 8 feet of water, wedged into the sand, and I thought of Hunt and Liddy and Ehrlichman, Haldeman and Colson and the whole team as sand wedge was the Chappaquiddick, and she says the water went from that there was a psychic thing that the Chappaquiddick would end to the Watergate, so that she saw a psychic link of the water, of the car water of 69, and they're being caught at the Watergate, which I thought was rather interesting. Sybil went on to, now this is the psychic thing that she felt that some ways linked in with the findings that I've had, but she'd go into the cottage up at Chappaquiddick, which I've never done, And she went to the window, and she had the feeling the window was open, and that the girl had something on her mind, and that she was directed to Ted Kennedy. Now, this is all hypothetical. This is what she claims. And that she was talking to somebody outside the window, that evidently there was a two-way, and that she had a sense that she was talking to a person outside the window, leaning out the window and talking. When I called the Capeschi family in 69, I said there was a, in quote, security guard out there that had something to do with your daughter's death. And it, this was just a few weeks after the accident without my traveling there. I said, if you get the name of that man, he saw her in the back of the car asleep, and that there was somebody outside the cottage that had nothing to do with the people in, and that he was prepared in some role. So I think it was interesting when I read this week that she heard Mary joke in contact or psychically with the man that was waiting outside. But I knew there was a man waiting outside who was involved in the murder of Mary Jo Capeschi. Now, she says there was a connection between someone leaning out the window and talking to someone outside. The person outside wasn't one of the party. This is what I knew and told the Capeschis also. The person inside was, and there's a connection between the girl and the person speaking in the bedroom window, and there was a message for her. Now, this is what Sybil is saying psychically, but this is what I also knew, I guess if you'd say psychically. I had no documentation at the time, but I had certain articles that broke down the way it happened within 2 weeks after the murder of Mary Jo Capeschi. Now, this is the Sybil Leach went down the road to the bridge, and she said that Mary Jo and Ted Kennedy were in the car, and they picked up a hitchhiker, and then they met two other men, and two Spanish men. Now, this is interesting, two Spanish men and a hitchhiker, and they were working for somebody else, part of a big plot. Well, one of the men involved has a Spanish name. He's not one of the Cubans that came up in the Watergate. He has a Spanish name. That I linked, one was an American name, one was a Spanish name, that I felt was definitely involved in this conspiracy right from the beginning, and that he had helped overthrow the car into the water. I felt that it could be reconstructed, that he helped engineer the car into the water, and Ted Kennedy was taken back to the hotel dry and sober with a concussion. And she claimed that there were people on the road, two Spanish surnames, who helped kidnapped, in a sense, Ted Kennedy to get the car going over the water, and he jumped out like these stunt things in the movies and got out. And what she goes on to say is that there is a plot, a political plot here, and it's still going on right now, and the purpose was to remove Ted Kennedy from the political scene. I thought it was an interesting article because it the headlines of Midnight saying Ted's death plotted by the CIA at Chappaquiddick is a signal. In some ways, these psychics have a lot of influence in Washington and are used by people there. And they foretell things that are going to be investigated. This is why I like to read them, because they are like, they break the shock of what's going to happen later. And they just come out and say it. And they don't have to count to anybody or come with documentation, but they're a sounding board. So that a lot of what Sybil Leach is saying here can be backed up. Now, we'll never know who or if Mary Jo was talking out a window to somebody, unless we find who that security guard was that I was talking about on the telephone to the Capeschis. But it's an interesting article. It's Midnight Magazine, December 30th, 1974. It's a long article on the role of Mary Jo as a plant and not part of the Democratic Party, and that she had to be killed and sacrificed. And I think it's interesting because it lines up so much with the actual documentation or the books that I have, four books on Chappaquiddick and the newspaper articles and so forth. The Chappaquiddick story is far from dead, and it could be a turning point even in the 76 election if Ted Kennedy was able to come forward and tell the whole story. The country, I think, would be very sympathetic with him, and it would take the Republicans by surprise if persons involved could step forward and really tell the truth. Well, our time is up again. Another 45 minutes gone. I moved along pretty fast this week, and we'll meet you next week in Dialogue Conspiracy. Keep reading the papers and order these books and articles, and keep up with the news, and we'll share it with you next week.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.